pre-recorded from his basement. It's the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 4 of the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bills Wire. My name is Kyle Selagi, and we've made it to episode 4. And you guys know what they say about episode 4, right?
What do they say?
They say when you've made it to episode 4, that means you've done 4 episodes. It's a age-old proverb there. Did you just boo me?
Yeah.
Oh, I invite this guy onto my podcast, and his first act is to boo me. All right, whatever. So we've got some good topics here today. We're gonna do some Bills talk as we always do here on the podcast. We're gonna talk about 3 under the radar Bills who could make the 53-man roster week 1. Each of us are going to have one person to discuss. Then we're gonna do some Sabres off-season talk, just because it's been a rough week to be just a Buffalonian who likes hockey, not even a Sabres fan. It's been a rough week, just with the St. Louis Blues winning the cup, seeing Ryan O'Reilly lift the Conn Smythe trophy. I was happy, a part of me was happy, but I shed a tear and it was not of joy. And then, if we have some time, I'm going to talk about Omaha, Nebraska, just because everyone loves to talk about Omaha, Nebraska. So, just before I introduce my guests, make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, subscribe to the iTunes feed, subscribe to our YouTube channel. We have a YouTube channel now, and eventually, this podcast is going to be video once I get around to setting up a camera, the tripod, a set. That'll happen eventually, just not today, just not this week. So joining me today to talk about these wonderful topics that I've prepared, we've got Justin DeLauro, Bills Wire writer. D'Lo, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to be back. It's great to go 4 for 4 on the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour.
Thank you. Yes, it is. It is. It's quite a feat to go 4 for 4 here. And also, we have Bills Wire managing editor. It's Nick Wotan with the loud noise in the background. Nick, how are you?
I didn't realize I had a loud noise in the background, but other than that, that's kind of creepy, but hey.
Yeah. Nick, we didn't know. We knew you were the managing editor. We didn't know you also worked on a construction site.
Yeah, well, you learn something new every day, Kyle.
I guess so. I also have to say this. Rich Kowalski, who is usually on the podcast, and by usually I mean he's been on the past 2 weeks, 2 out of 4, that's a 500 average. Hey, there we go. He fixed the noise.
How's that?
We're making progress here. I'm going to guess it was the air conditioner.
My window was open, and I don't know. Maybe it was my headphones, too, because now I don't have the headphones in. So, we're problem solvers here at the Bills Wire. Like so.
I'm going to edit out that sound so no one's going to know what I'm talking about, but, I mean, it's much more peaceful for D'Lo and I now. So, Rich Kowalski, he's on assignment this week. He's not here this week, but he will be back next week once he's back from assignment. He told me to say that. So, here we go. We've got the first topic of the day. 3 under-the-radar Bills who could make the opening 53-man roster. That is 3. Each one of us. There are 3 of us. Each one of us will talk about one player. And that adds up to 3 last time I did that math. So I'll throw it over to Nick Wotan, just because he had the least time to prepare. So why not let him start? Nick Wotan, who is your under-the-radar Buffalo Bill currently on the roster who could sneak his way on to the 53-man roster week 1?
Well, thanks for giving me the honor of going first, and also I'm the only one that did not reveal my answer to you guys. So you guys...
That is very true.
You have to be on the edge of your seat right now. Yes.
I am. If we were on camera, the audience would see. They'll just have to trust me.
Yeah, I guess so. But I'm going to start off with the wide receiver, the big boy in Duke Williams. I guess
he
kind of finished off the training camp, mini camp, with a nice touchdown catch. I guess he's a little inconsistent right now, but I think what makes him appealing is simply his size. I mean, the Bills obviously added guys in Cole Beasley and John Brown, who aren't exactly going to dunk on me anytime soon, which I think they probably would. Anyways, Duke Williams definitely would dunk on me, and I just think that once the pads go on in training camp, is really going to be his opportunity because he's that big body, physical guy that they simply just don't have. It's either him or David Sills if they decide to keep one at all. The last couple of years, it's been Andre Holmes, and he hasn't really provided too much other than some special teams. But yeah, I'm going to go with Duke Williams. I think he's going to, once the pads get on, he's going to hopefully find his way on the roster.
Yeah, I like that you described him as a big boy. That's always a great way to describe a football player. You know,
blue collar as well.
Exactly. Lunch pail guys, you know.
Yeah.
But as you brought up, the Bills' current wide receiver room, I mean, they do have a lot of small boys. They've got John Brown and Cole Beasley, who, like you said, aren't dunking on you soon. I don't know how tall you are, but, you know, they're just not... They're speed guys. In Beasley's case, he's more of a shifty guy. He's fast, but he doesn't... that's not his claim to fame as his speed. His claim to fame is his ability to make receivers miss and just his, you know, ability to get open off the line of scrimmage. And John Brown's just go route. Hopefully he'll be able to beat defensive backs down the field to be on the receiving end of Josh Allen deep balls. But, yeah, I mean, the Bills really don't have the guy who can... the go up and get it type guy. They thought they had that in Kelvin Benjamin, who, as we know, he didn't go up, nor did he get it, rarely.
or did he run?
Yeah, he didn't even try.
nor did he try for the ball, so it kind of narrows down his progress.
Yeah, I mean, and Duke Williams, he's not 6'5", but he's a built man. He could dunk on Nick, as he said. And... yeah. Just his story. I think his story is something that, I mean, at least Sean McDermott will resonate with. He likes the underdogs. He likes the guys who fight back from adversity and just stake their claim and make their roster spot undeniable. And just looking at his story, just he was undrafted out of Auburn, tried to make an NFL roster, didn't. I think he got cut by the Rams, if I remember correctly. Went to the CFL, and he just tore it up for a year. And now he's back here trying to tear up the NFL again. But, I mean, that's something that a lot of people don't talk about, is they bring up his CFL numbers and how prolific he was as a CFL receiver without mentioning the differences between the CFL and the NFL game. I mean, for one, the size of the field, the CFL field...
you could take a running start anywhere.
Yeah, running starts... and, like, that's the thing. Everyone looks at that clip of him just bulldozing that DB, and I think he was in Saskatchewan. I think that's the team he played for. Or is it Saskatoon or Saskatchewan?
Saskatchewan.
I think he played for Edmonton.
But he did play, yeah, the Eskimos.
There we go, guys. I'm thinking of Naaman Roosevelt. He played for Saskatchewan. Oh, yes, he played for the Edmonton Eskimos. Edmonton Eskimos. That's where we go. We help each other here on the Kyle Slaggy Variety Hour. So, yeah, everyone looks at that clip of him just bulldozing that DB, but, I mean, that's never going to happen in the NFL because he's not getting that running start. So, I think that's a very good point that he could be that guy to sneak onto the 53-man roster in the receiving room just because if he can adapt quickly and he can show that, I mean, he hasn't forgotten how to play American football... I think he's a weapon that the Bills don't really have.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I'm thinking with Duke Williams, too. It's something that they don't have. And if he can make it work, it's going to be a good weapon, I think, for Josh Allen, for sure. At the end of minicamp, he went up and he got it over Tre'Davious White, who's pretty good at playing defensive football in America, even. So
right.
That's
America.
Yeah, so if he can keep doing stuff like that, he's got a good chance to make this roster, since no one else can really do it. He does, except David Sills, and a lot of people are excited about him, but he was an undrafted guy for a reason, so how excited can you really get?
Yeah, David Sills, I remember I was talking to my friend on the phone after the draft, and I was telling him the Bills, he's a big Packers fan, so I was talking to him about the Bills undrafted free agents, and I said the Bills signed David Sills, and he's like, no, they didn't. Did they really? Oh, he's a steal. He's their number three receiver. And it's like, sure, David Sills was good at West Virginia, but also, I mean, from a quarterback perspective, you can't really get any difference any different between Josh Allen and Will Greer. Josh Allen's thing is he can throw the ball far, he can throw the ball hard, but accuracy, there's some issues there. Will Greer, his lack of arm strength is really what prevented him from being a first-round quarterback. Will Greer is just a pinpoint guy. He can put the ball anywhere. So I think that's part of the reason why David Sills was so solid at West Virginia was he had a quarterback who just put it there, who always was on the money with his throws. So we'll see how David Sills, how his rapport develops with Josh Allen. But I think that is something to look at. You can bring up David Sills' college stats. He had a bunch of touchdowns. I think he might have led the Big 12 in touchdowns throughout his 2 years at West Virginia. But also, the type of quarterback that he's going to be playing with in Buffalo is vastly different than the type of quarterback he was playing with at West Virginia. Dila, what do you think about Duke Williams here?
I think it's very intriguing. It's just very difficult looking at that wide receiver room of who he would jump. I mean, right now you're looking at Foster, Brown, Beasley, Zay Jones, and then whoever's going to be a special teams ace. And then it depends, are they going to keep a sixth wide receiver? And if they do, that's where you're going to see like the Williams, Sills type of player fall in the line. If they're keeping five, then it's going to be hard to really find that spot for one of those two players. And then, you know, then you're looking at practice squad.
I think a big factor, an underlying factor in this Duke Williams discussion as well, is going to be Zay Jones, actually, because he's not a huge guy, but he's not a small guy when you're, you know, comparing him to Cole Beasley and the likes of John Brown. He's certainly bigger than them, and apparently he won some team, you know, strength training award or something, so apparently he's getting bigger.
He's zooted. Big boy.
Yeah, so he's going into his third year, and if maybe they're going to feel like Zay Jones can be that a little bit more of that get up and get it guy. I mean, he's not as big as Duke Williams, so I think if maybe Zay Jones does enough, and then also to D'Lo's point where if they keep a sixth receiver, I think that's the way Duke Williams makes this roster, because now it looks like Andre Roberts is also getting a little run in there as maybe a fifth wide receiver and, of course, the return man too. So between those two factors, I think also is going to weigh in on Duke Williams.
Yeah, I think To quickly go off there, Andre Roberts, I think he's a lock because of his I mean, they signed him to a 2-year deal and his special teams prowess. And he said at his introductory press conference that his goal wherever he goes is to play wide receiver. He knows his role. He knows that teams bring him in to be a returner, but that doesn't stop him from trying to make an impact in practice as a receiver. And it looks like at minicamp he did make an impact. So I think the fact that Andre Roberts is showing prowess as a receiver, that spells danger for a Duke Williams or David Sills or Isaiah McKenzie or Ray McLeod, especially McKenzie or McLeod, guys who would make the roster based off of their special teams ability, their return ability. Now that they've got a guy, they've got an all-pro returner, arguably the best returner in the league, who can also contribute on offense, I think that's not good for Isaiah McKenzie especially.
And this the special teams was so horrendous the last couple seasons. Yeah. They need something that's going to solidify that unit, and having Roberts there will obviously help out immensely.
So now I think we've done enough receiver talk here. Duke Williams, I think he is a very strong dark horse candidate to make the 53-man roster, because as we said, they just don't have a guy like him, really. So we'll go to D'Lo now. D'Lo, I know you're shifting to the defensive side of the ball. Who's your under-the-radar guy who could sneak onto the 53?
I'm going defense. Obviously, I'm going to go cornerback, E.J. Gaines. It's kind of a weird thing because he had such a strong season with the Bills in 2017, and then he left for Cleveland, and last year was just a mess injury-wise for him. So the Bills bring him back on a 1-year deal. And ultimately, between Gaines, Kevin Johnson, Levi Wallace, one of those guys is ultimately going to be starting opposite Tre'Davious White. And 2 years ago, White had such a strong season with Gaines opposite him. Right now, Gaines is kind of thrown in like as a depth player right now, but he'll be able to have this 1 year prove it deal to kind of figure it out. And I feel like he's ultimately going to supplant Johnson, Wallace, whoever else is in the way, and ultimately be starting. It's kind of an interesting one because it's not necessarily a guy who I think would miss the 53-man roster. Mm-hmm. But if he's not starting, I don't see him coming off the bench necessarily. So I think he's absolutely going to be in contention to win this job and ultimately be across from White.
Yeah, I know some people might be thinking now, like, EJ Gaines, he is not a dark horse. He's not under the radar. But I think if they do think that, they're probably just thinking about 2017 because of how prolific he was in that defense. He was part of what was arguably the best secondary in the league that year, a key part of it. But I think you're right. I think he is an under-the-radar guy because any guy who played only six games for a different team last season who was on a new team, he's an under-the-radar guy to make the roster no matter what. That's the thing with EJ Gaines is just his availability. He's never been able to stay healthy. I think he had the foot injury in St. Louis back then, and that's some sort of injury has harmed him or has haunted him ever since. You look at Buffalo, when he was in the lineup, they were great. I think they were like 6-2 or something, or like they only lost a few games when EJ Gaines was in the lineup. Now, I know cornerback wins isn't a real stat. Cornerback wins shouldn't be counted, but that just proves that the Bills' defense was better with EJ Gaines. It was more of a lockdown unit with EJ Gaines in the lineup than they were without it. So I think EJ Gaines is... I could see him making the 53-man roster, but like you said, D'Lo, I don't see him coming off the bench either. In my opinion, the competition is between him and Levi Wallace. I think this is just an embarrassment of riches here. They've got the guy who was very good in their defense 2 years ago and the guy who was very good in their defense last year, and they're just going to duke it out to see who's going to be very good this year. Kevin Johnson, I like Kevin Johnson, but right now he looks like he's the odd man out for me. Just again, he's another guy who's had injury problems in the past, and just with Gaines and his past familiarity with the defense and Wallace, I really don't see Kevin Johnson as a candidate to win this job.
I think the most interesting part with EJ Gaines is going to be if he does anything in the slot. I mean, we have Taron Johnson there, who's great, but the one thing that stood out with me when the Bills signed him and McDermott was talking about the signing, as he did mention Gaines playing some slot or playing some inside. And of course, before in 2017, that's not what he did. He played across from Tre'Davious White. So I think we might see him in maybe a couple different roles on defense. Of course, the best part about this whole cornerback discussion, though, is I don't know if it's too soon, but of course we have Vontae Davis from the past, and that ended up turning into Phillip Gaines, which ended up turning into a turnstile of cornerbacks. And there's so much depth at this position now. It's really just a complete 180 from last season when they seemingly had to go all the way down to their practice squad and grab this no-name guy, Levi Wallace. And thank goodness it finally worked out on like the fifth swing they took on second cornerback last year. But definitely a lot of depth here with EJ Gaines, Kevin Johnson, and everyone else involved.
It is entirely too soon for Vontae Davis references. It will always be entirely too soon for Vontae Davis jokes. But, yeah, it's an interesting point you bring up about the nickel spot. I could see EJ Gaines slotting in, especially if he doesn't win the job, and Levi Wallace does win the job, especially with Taron Johnson's injury past. I think he'll be good for the regular season, but you just don't know with a shoulder injury, and he played hurt last year, so maybe he'll play hurt again if he does re-injure it. Hopefully he doesn't, because he's very good. But, I mean, given that shoulder injury in his rookie year, you're going to want some depth at that position. So EJ Gaines could be a guy. I think another guy is Saran Neal. He's a guy who I was looking at possibly to include or to have as my dark horse to make the 53-man roster. Just because he didn't do a lot last year. He was more of a special teams guy. But apparently they've been testing him out at nickel at minicamp. And Matt Fairburn on, I think it was Wednesday from The Athletic, Matt Fairburn tweeted out that Saran Neal had 3 sacks from the nickel spot at that minicamp practice. So again, it's minicamp. It's not real football. But, I mean, if he's making an impact at nickel, I could see him making the roster over Raphael Bush, who played nickel last year when Taron Johnson went down. And Raphael Bush was just okay. That's the glowing review I'll give Raphael Bush, is just okay.
Yeah, about right. And for sure, Neal coming out and having a good spring, if he can turn that into a good summer, and then when we inch closer and closer to the fall, that could be bad news for Bush, I think, because he's... He was pretty spotty, as you kind of alluded to there, Kyle.
D'Lo, do you have any final EJ Gaines thoughts?
Just looking at some PFF numbers, Levi Wallace actually had a higher rating opposite White last year, 85.3, versus Gaines 80.6. However, looking back at what happened in 2017 and looking at the tape, it's just Gaines just felt like he had a stronger presence in the pass game against the run. Little bigger body than Wallace. They're not tall guys, but Gaines is a little stockier, a little stronger against the run, so that's why I think he might be able to inch out and win the battle over Wallace.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting battle to watch just because both those guys were so good in two different seasons. It'll just be interesting to see who was able to stake their claim on that number two cornerback spot. So now we will transition to my dark horse. I went crazy here.
Let's do it.
I went a little wild. I took a massive swing. Could be a massive miss, or it could be a home run. And I'm hoping I'm swinging for the fences here. I picked Darryl Johnson, defensive end, Bill's seventh round pick. I think he was their first of two seventh round picks in the 2019 draft. 6'6". He's put on some muscle in the past few months. I think he played in college at like 220 at 6'6", which is just, I mean, that's a beanstalk. But he's put on some muscle. I think he's up near 250 or 260 now. That's what he's playing at in minicamp, at least. He played his college ball at North Carolina A&T. That is an FCS school. And he was dominant in the 2018 season. He had 10.5 sacks, earned Mideastern Athletic Conference Defensive Player of the Year honors, led the conference in sacks that year, or last year. And the thing with Darryl Johnson is, just reading, I'll be honest, I didn't know who Darryl Johnson was a minute before they drafted him. I had no idea who Darryl Johnson was. But just reading some... you were a Darryl Johnson expert?
Big Darryl Johnson guy.
Big North Carolina A&T Aggies fan.
That's right.
So just reading scouting reports on him afterwards, they said a lot of... The consensus on him was that he's raw. That he may have to rework his entire just stance and just the way he attacks offensive linemen at the professional level. But you know who they said was raw? Marcus Davenport, UTSA defender who had 4.5 sacks in 13 games last year for a team that was a blown call away from the Super Bowl. I'm not comparing Darryl Johnson to Marcus Davenport in the slightest outside of the frame. They're both, I think, 6'6", 260, around there. But I'm just bringing up Marcus Davenport as an example of a guy who they can say is raw, who has to just change the way he plays at the professional level, who can still make an impact immediately. I think Marcus Davenport, probably the more polished player, while still raw, just the more polished player, given that he did play Division I college football. Granted, that was at UTSA. I don't know how much of a difference there is between UTSA and the national champions of Division II, which I think Darryl Johnson won two consecutive national championships at North Carolina A&T. But just that the idea of a talented but raw defensive end, just under the right circumstances and under proper coaching, he can be reeled in and he can be made into an impactful player straight away. So, just I've talked about this on a previous episode of the podcast. I did interview Darryl Johnson for BuffaloBills.com when I was working for them still, and he just seems like a smart guy. That's a humble brag there, but Darryl Johnson, he just seems like a smart individual. I asked him why he left North Carolina A&T when he still had a year of eligibility left, and he was on the verge of establishing himself as probably the most dominant player in that school's history, at least defensively. And he told me this is the exact quote, it was a business decision. You know, what if I go back and get hurt, or what if I go back and don't have the season that I had? I'm young, I just feel like my best football is ahead of me. Being in the NFL, coaches will help elevate my game even more. I believe in our coaching staff at the Bills. I believe that they're going to put me in the best position to get me ready and get me prepared to play. So he knows that he's young and that a year of NFL football is going to do him more good in the long term than a senior year at North Carolina A&T. He knows that a year under NFL tutelage will help him develop into the player he wants to be sooner than just his senior season. And I also read the piece that he wrote for a website called The Undefeated, where he said that he had Rookie of the Year aspirations. And this is what sold me on Darryl Johnson, was this quote. He said, I want to come in and soak in from the veterans and try to get me on the field as much as as fast as possible and try to do my thing to help us win and become a championship football team. If that's going to take me to be rookie of the year, that's what I'm going to do. That's my goal, to be try to be rookie of the year. Let's try to get a Super Bowl this year. This guy's confident. He's confident. He wants to win. He wants to help the team. Granted, I think rookie of the year is a long shot. 53-man roster is a long shot. But just given his size, his frame, his just ability and potential, I think putting him on the practice squad, if he has even a decent spring, a decent preseason, I think putting him on the practice squad is too risky. Teams want to have a developmental defensive end. So I think just putting him on the practice squad for any team to take, that's too big of a risk when you're looking at a player who is as dominant at his level as Daryl Johnson, who could be transformed into at least a solid player at the NFL level. So I think they might keep him on the 53-man roster, just as, even if he's going to be scratched every week, just you don't want another team to steal him. So I know that's a bold take, but I'll go to you, D'Lo. What do you think about Daryl Johnson here?
That's a fire take.
Thank you.
I'm just looking at the depth chart right now. I just don't know who he beats out. You know, last year they rolled with four defensive ends. A lot of Murphy, Hughes, Lawson, Yarborough. And then Mike Love kind of peeked in a little bit. I just don't know which of those top four guys he would beat out to make the roster, and if Sean McDermott would risk a roster spot for somebody who's perpetually going to be scratched every week, pretty much.
Nick?
Yeah, Kyle, it's certainly a bold take by you. Obviously had a couple too many monster drinks this morning,
ooh,
I think.
Stop!
it's an interesting proposition that you laid out. I mean, he obviously has the physical traits you want to see in a defensive end, and certainly projects more as a developmental piece. If he flashes, if he shows a little bit more pass rush, I'll take him, because as D'Lo mentioned, the number four guy kind of last year was Eddie Yarborough, and he's great against the run, or pretty good against the run, but he's only got one sack in two seasons with the Bills. And, me personally, I got to know Eddie Yarborough pretty good when I was covering the team, and he's like the nicest guy out there, and I really pull for him. You know, Kyle, as you know, you alluded to meeting or speaking to Daryl Johnson, you get to know these guys a little bit and you want to root for them.
Yeah.
It would be a little bit heartbreaking for me if he made the team over Eddie. That's you know, I looking at the numbers never lie, and if he can provide some more pass rush to Bills. Obviously low key we're not a very good pass rushing team over the last season. Of course their pass defense kind of takes the headlines away from there, but I believe they had 36 sacks all of last season.
Yeah.
And that was 26th best in the NFL. I've written that line like a million times on Bills. So I have one ingrained in the memory. But, yeah, they need a better pass rush. They need more. If they can get out of Daryl Johnson, that's great. But, of course, this pass rush is going to come down to the top three of Murphy, Lawson, and Jerry Hughes. They really need a lot more from those guys.
Yeah, you guys are probably right. I think any seventh-round pick is a long shot to make the roster. But just – like I said, just the potential there. You look at the frame, and like I said, if he shows even a flash of pass rush ability, as you alluded to, Nick, I think that potential of what he could develop into, I think I'd rather keep a player who could develop into a solid pass rusher over an Eddie Yarborough or an Eli Harold, who they just signed recently. I think I would rather keep potential who could contribute right now in at least a rotational role over a guy who is just a rotational guy who's already reached their ceiling. But that's just me. Who knows?
Maybe. Hey. I need a couple monster drinks.
These Kyle memes they've ruined my life.
I had to figure a way to slide like some monster comments in there. And, you know, Daryl Johnson seems like it came right out of the old monster factory. Looking at some drywall and got mad or something, Kyle. So
you've made me punch drywall this podcast. If we were on camera, they'd see it.
Oh. Yeah,
next week. So yeah, we're 30 minutes deep. We've done the Bills topic. There are your three under the radar locks to make the 53-man roster. There's your Bills Wire article. You got EJ Gaines.
There it is.
You got Duke Williams, and now Daryl Johnson. That's the name. Daryl Johnson. I just argued for him, but I forgot his name.
Not the fullback.
That's not a great argument for him when you forgot the guy that you picked.
He's a good guy, good player, maybe.
He did lead the he led the MEAC in sacks, right?
Yes, dominant. Okay, speaking of dominant, the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah,
not my best transition, but
I liked it.
we'll do a little Sabres talk, which might turn into a lot of Sabres talk just because I know D'Lo and I, we're just lost. We don't know what's going on with this team anymore. The St. Louis Blues, they just won the Stanley Cup. And Ryan O'Reilly finally got to lift the Stanley Cup in royal blue. Just wasn't in Buffalo.
Just not here.
Won the Conn Smythe. And guys, I hate to tell you, he was a Sabre. The Sabres traded him. And I know this was a hot button issue back in November when the Blues were bad and the Sabres were the best team in the league. Remember that? Do you remember what felt like 10 years ago but was only a few months ago? People were saying the Sabres won that trade. But now that Ryan O'Reilly has a Stanley Cup ring and a Conn Smythe trophy, let's look at that return with hindsight being 2020 here. So the Sabres, in return for Conn Smythe winner and locker room leader and overall very good hockey player Ryan O'Reilly, the Buffalo Sabres received Patrick Berglund, who quit.
Vontae Davis does.
Vladimir Sobotka. Too soon. Vladimir Sobotka, who should quit. Tage Thompson, who the team quit on. The 31st pick in the 2019 draft. And a second round pick in the 2021 draft. If that's not a big oof, then I don't know what a big oof is.
You know, how about we just throw in who the Sabres traded for, or traded to Colorado as well, and just, let's just bring it all full circle.
Mikhail Grigorenko, well, it's okay. They didn't give up anything else,
no,
right?
JT Compher and Nikita Zadorov aren't doing anything else. And
oh,
there's a fourth guy, right? Who am I forgetting?
I think it was a pick, wasn't it?
Was it a pick? I can't remember for the life of me.
I think they traded like the first pick in the second round,
it could have been.
I don't know who Colorado took with that, if anyone. Or maybe they traded it, or I don't know if he turned into anything. But still, it's just, that's a bad trade. I remember even when the trade happened, I think it was Pierre LeBrun from The Athletic tweeted out, like, solid of Jason Botterill to get five assets for Ryan O'Reilly with his back up against the wall. It's like, A, his back wasn't up against the wall. Ryan O'Reilly has term left on his deal. It's a good contract. I mean, he didn't want to pay him his bonus. He didn't want to pay good hockey player his good bonus. I mean, you got to pay good players in any sport. That's just how it works.
I don't know, Kyle. He was a locker room cancer, and he lost his love for the game.
That's just, I don't get it.
Should we just start yelling now? Should we just yell for the next 10 minutes and just unload?
I'm gonna try to keep it.
Because we're keeping it pretty calm right now, but it's,
yeah, it'll get tense.
I have no idea how folks really ever soured on Ryan O'Reilly. Probably the fake news media, but
oh god,
probably the fake news media and failing New York Times that did the trick. But anyways, you get Ryan O'Reilly, and he was like a folk hero by having his, if you guys recall, when he first signed with the team, he would have his quote-unquote Ryan O'Reilly practices, where he would just stay on the ice after practice and like shoot pucks for a while, and wow, he went from that guy that everyone respected to, wow, this guy's a bum, get rid of him, he's a cancer in the locker room. For the life of me, I have no idea how this fan base turned on the guy, but I couldn't be happier, of course, for everything that he accomplished this year in St. Louis. I saw him, again, I'm going to drop another story because it made myself sound pretty cool here.
Yep.
I was at an establishment in downtown Buffalo drinking some soda pops one evening, and he was actually there. It was after he got traded, which was very bizarre. I don't know, he must have been moving stuff or whatever, but he was in a bar late at night in downtown Buffalo, like a couple weeks after he got traded, and I'm like, what the hell is that? What is the Ryan O'Reilly doing? Shouldn't you be somewhere else right now? I ended up talking to him, and he was... I always respected him because as the PR people got to do what they got to do, and they always cut off reporters, because the players want to get on with their lives, as crazy as it sounds. But Ryan O'Reilly was always great. He always took everybody's question, no matter how long it was. Players don't always do that. Kyle, you can attest to that. They don't want to talk forever.
Yep.
He always did that, so I always liked him for that. And then, he just afterwards, he was like, yeah, I really wish you could have worked out here and really had nothing, but he's like, I'm going to miss Buffalo and all this stuff. And, like, this was, like, wasn't, like, prompted by me. I'm not interviewing the guy. I'm having a, you know, just seeing Ryan O'Reilly and talking to him. And he kind of recognized me a little bit because I asked him a couple questions before, like I said. But, I wasn't asking him, oh, are you going to miss it here, blah, blah. Like, this was so unprompted, and he was such a nice guy about it. And really couldn't be happier for him and all the success that he had over, obviously, the last few weeks.
Yeah, I feel like Ryan O'Reilly was the player that, like, everyone saw here. I mean, like, I remember C.J. Spiller a few years ago when he was here. I was in high school when C.J. Spiller was here. But I felt like C.J. Spiller was always the Bill that all of my friends saw around town. He was just always everywhere, it seemed like, and everyone saw C.J. Spiller. Everyone had a picture with C.J. Spiller. I feel like Ryan O'Reilly was kind of the Sabres equivalent of that in recent years. Just a lot of people I knew met Ryan O'Reilly at some place or another downtown, and they always had positive stories about him. Just a salt-of-the-earth guy, I guess. But I'm happy for him just because, like you said, Buffalo fans turned on him like that in the matter of 30 seconds when he gave that answer about losing the love of the game, which, I mean, ask Sabres fans. I'm sure they'll tell you the Sabres have made them lose their love of the game recently. But playing losing hockey, that's, you know, you shouldn't stop loving hockey because of that. But I'm happy for Ryan O'Reilly. I'm happy he got his cup. Happy he got his Conn Smythe. But that just, it doesn't look good for the Sabres, who are now desperate to improve their roster. And they at least maintained their roster in recent weeks, re-signing Jeff Skinner, the 40-goal scorer, to an 8-year, $72 million deal. I want to bring it up. I called that. I know that was reported by many other outlets days before I said it, but I said on episode 2 of the Kyle Slegga Variety Hour that the contract was going to be eight years, $72 million. I called it. So I'm Big Shot Reporter, Big J Journalism.
You're like Nostradamus.
Yeah, I have all the scoops. So, Sabres, they made that signing. They're paying a player who, I would argue, is good, but not as well-rounded and not as good as Ryan O'Reilly. They're paying him more than they were paying Ryan O'Reilly, so that's very cool. And they're rumored to be interested in Minnesota Wild winger Jason Zucker, or Zucker. Is it Zucker? Zucker? Which is it?
I believe it's Zucker.
Zucker. He had 21 goals, 21 assists for 42 points last year. He was also a minus 9. So that's good. That's a solid stat line. And I think Pierre LeBrun also reported that they have some interest in Nashville Predators center Kyle Turris. I think I said Nashville Predators weird, but whatever. Nashville center Kyle Turris, who's going to be a free agent. He had 23 points last year. He was a minus 6. The man hasn't put up second-line center numbers since 2016-17. That's when he had, 55 points that year, and he was also a minus 3. So, Kyle Turris, I don't think he's a second-line center at this point in his career, but if the Sabres want to pay him like he's won, sure. So, D'Lo, just, what is going on? What is this team doing?
I'm trying to think about this so I don't swear on your podcast. It really shows the dysfunction of the hockey ops and the Sabres. I mean, think about it. The Jeff Skinner thing just feels like Thomas Vanek all over again, right? They didn't get a chance, you know, they didn't sign Drury or Briere. So when Edmonton came in with that restricted free agent offer, they had to jump on it. Jeff Skinner is the type of player who, you know.
Hello? We lost D'Lo.
Oh, great.
We lost D'Lo. His rant made him go crazy.
Wow. He lost his mind and my connection. He was so angry. Oh, he's gone.
There he goes. So, as D'Lo said before his either internet or mind gave out on him, that's a bad contract. 8 years, $72 million, that's a bad contract. Jeff Skinner's a good player, but he's had 140-goal year. And he's going to be getting paid $9 million for the foreseeable future, $9 million per year, just because of that one good year. Do I think he will be a 30-goal scorer for the next 2 or 3 years? Yeah, he's a prolific goal scorer, and he'll be playing on Jack Eichel's wing. There's no reason why he shouldn't get at least 30. Maybe he'll have another 40-goal year. But still, as D'Lo was saying, It's just that contract's going to look so bad when he's in his mid-30s, even early 30s, if he doesn't reach that production again. I don't like the deal. So what do you think, Nick?
Yeah, it's easy to project forward that in a couple years this is not going to be the best-looking contract that is going to be on the Sabres' books, but you gotta almost believe that. Excuse me, that Jeff Skinner was sitting there watching the playoffs and watching Ryan O'Reilly's success and just going, the way you termed it was, Jason Boxer with his back against the wall. Hey, D'Lo.
Hey.
Boxer's back was not against the wall with Ryan O'Reilly, but when Ryan O'Reilly left or was traded and had all the success, was his back against the wall when it got to Jeff Skinner, because what was he going to do? He can't let Jeff Skinner walk after that.
Mm-hmm. D'Lo, he has returned.
I don't know what happened. I apologize. We didn't pay the FiOS bill, so that must have been, that must have been the issue. It just like went nuts. I was in the middle of stuttering about how frustrated I was with the ineptitude of the hockey ops, Sabres management, people making decisions. When Murray was here, it was interesting because we knew he was ultimately going to tear down the team, but in every trade he made, he ultimately wanted the best player in the deal.
Yeah.
And he got that. Now, what happened after that, I don't know. It just became a manure show. I mean, for those teams to finish toward the bottom of the standings each season was a train wreck, but kind of bailing on Dan Bylsma, which is kind of weird that I'm saying that. Like, I like Dan Bylsma, and it's like he actually was able to do a decent job with what he had. Bailing on him and then going to Phil Housley just sunk the team. I mean, whether you loved analytics or you loved watching film, what Phil Housley was doing with this team just wasn't working, and it was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And it made the team worse in many ways. And ultimately, it sunk the team. I mean, as much as his wife wants to jump on Twitter and say the team improved a little bit, it was just a train wreck. And ultimately, I think that's going to be even bigger in keeping the team from progressing more so than whatever the tank is. Whatever people's opinions on the tank, it happened. I mean, it's 6 years, 5 years ago. We kind of got to right the ship and stop complaining about it, or else we're going to be doing this for another 10 years of just staring at the wall in late April because we can't make the playoffs. The roster's worse.
Mm-hmm.
The way the team plays is worse. And hopefully Ralph Kruger can get something out of this team. I mean, Skinner's a nice signing. He's a great player, 40-goal scorer this year, which was awesome. But ultimately, we're going to be eating this contract toward the end of the time. It's just, I don't know how they can't get this whole thing situated. It's just, we would laugh at Edmonton.
Yep.
Years ago, like, laugh at them. You'd listen to people on any hockey radio shows and people would just laugh at them and talk about how mismanaged they are and how anybody want to trade with Peter Chiarelli. And now ultimately I feel like Buffalo's that. Like, if you want to make a trade and fleece somebody, come to, you know, talk to Buffalo. And it's just, it's rough. Like, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, this team lacks accountability. I think that's a major part of it, is there's nobody who is accountable. You see Phil Housley last year. I mean, Phil Housley, I'm sorry, he looked like a fish out of water the whole time he was the coach. I hate to say it, he looked like a goof. He looks like he didn't know what he was doing. And I think bringing Ralph Kruger in, I think that's going to help them be accountable. Everything I've read about the guy, everything I've heard about the guy, is that he doesn't take any bull. He's just a no-nonsense guy who just will put the right guys on the ice in the right situation, and he doesn't mess around. He's there to win, which I think is what this team needs. But I also think they need somebody like that from the player perspective. They need a leader. Maybe like a Ryan O'Reilly type, but not Ryan O'Reilly, obviously. But I think they do need a player who can help. We'll connect it back to the Bills. A Lorenzo Alexander type. Just a still good player who it resonates with the coach's message and helps translate it and say it to the players so they further resonate with the message as well. So I'm just going to take a shot in the dark here. I'm just going to say the Sabres need this player. We brought up Kyle Turris earlier, but he's not the Predator I'm interested in. I think the Sabres need to make a trade for PK Subban. That is a... I'm not lying.
What assets do the Sabres have to make that happen?
I'll get to it.
Oh, look at this.
I'll get to it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, PK Subban. He's 30 years old. He has 3 years left on his current deal at $9 million per. That's a hefty contract. I'll say it. That's a very hefty contract, but the Sabres have cap space. They don't have any players. Might as well have cap space, right? But PK Subban, just from what I've listened to interviews with the guy, I've just listened to him on shows and everything, and again, he seems like a no-nonsense type of guy. He seems like a guy that players just kind of huddle around in the locker room and are kind of drawn to, just as kind of the leader, I guess, just the heart and soul of a team. And he just strikes me as the type of guy who would come in there alongside Ralph Kruger and say, you know, enough is enough. It's time to turn this team around. They'll say, we haven't been here, but we know what's been going on. Just, it's time to turn this team around. Look at the talent and look at the fan base. Look at what, I mean, they've been suffering. This team has been suffering. We have the talent. There's no reason to not be at least a playoff team. When you have Jack Eichel and Jeff Skinner, Jack Eichel, I mean, people might say he's that guy. He's the leader. He's the captain, but is he the leader?
No.
Jack Eichel's a very talented hockey player. The most talented player on the Sabres, one of the most talented hockey players in the league. But I haven't seen leadership qualities out of him. Granted, I haven't been in the locker room. Nick, you would be more apt to talk about that than I would. But just watching him and how he handles himself in post-game interviews, he doesn't strike me as the locker room leader, as the guy who can rally the troops. PK Subban does strike me as that type. And also, you look at Nashville before and after that PK Subban trade. And that's another thing. Buffalo fans might remember PK Subban from his Montreal days. I think he was kind of outspoken then. He was playing in one of the bigger markets in the league. But since he's gone to Nashville, I think he's kind of matured a bit. He's kind of taken pride in being the face of a franchise and the guy who does rally the troops around him. And again, you just look at Nashville before and after that trade. Before that trade, they were kind of a grit and grind team with Shea Weber on the back end. He was their leader. They were just perennially good team. They were always solid, always a playoff threat at least. But then after PK Subban gets there, he just changed the whole dynamic of the team. All of a sudden, they're exciting. They're a team you want to watch. They are a perennial cup contender. So I don't know if PK Subban makes the Sabres a cup contender, but I think he would give the Sabres that locker room leader, that guy who's going to go in there, no nonsense, rally the troops, the guy that everyone else can kind of just go around and just are drawn to in the locker room, and just be that guy who can help lead this team to the next step. And as for assets to give up for him, I mean, the Predators want to get rid of him, I guess. Or at least he's on the trading block. Rasmus Ristolainen's a guy who's been on the trading block. You put Rasmus Ristolainen in the deal, they get their defenseman back. I would happily throw in pick 31 for him, and I would also happily throw in a prospect. I would do Ristolainen, pick 31, and a prospect for PK Subban.
Interesting. I think you're right on, spot on. My two cents is, I think you're spot on about Eichel. I mean, I think he's an amazing player, but I don't see him as a leader. I think they gave him the C because that's what you do in the NHL in the past 20 years. Your best player on the team gets the C, and that's not really indicative of as much of a leader as it should be. So, I mean, yeah, I agree with you there that they need a change in that sort of organizational type way. How they're going to get it, maybe it'll be PK Subban, but...
He's the guy.
I certainly wouldn't be mad about him. I think he's outstanding. I mean... the Sabres should have gotten a head coach, though, that, you know, thrived in Nashville with him. I don't know who they could have possibly gotten for that.
Phil Housley, former Nashville guy.
Well, I don't think they should have kept Phil Housley, but, yeah, anyways. You certainly had your monsters this morning, Kyle.
What is the memes? I can't stand them.
Just remember, if Subban comes here, we have to unretire 76 or Andrew Peters.
Oh, you're right. Axe the deal. We don't need him.
It's done.
That was a good one. I will give you that one.
Thanks.
We can't have him now.
Yeah, never mind. I guess I'll just forget about my PK Subban dreams.
I just don't understand how this team is so bad.
They need PK. Again, I don't think PK Subban single-handedly changes the culture. No. That takes multiple years, and that takes a group effort. But I think PK Subban goes a long way in helping change that culture.
Do you think PK Subban wears 76 because of anger beaters?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly it, actually. But, you know, we're not going to talk about Omaha, Nebraska today. I was just going to go on a bit of a rant about why the heck was there an MLB game played in Omaha, Nebraska? I don't get that.
You want the simple reason?
Yes.
Simple reason is the College World Series is coming up.
Oh, so...
So they can capitalize on fans going to, you know, an MLB game, and then this weekend the College World Series starts.
Okay.
So, like, you know, it kind of gets some fans into Omaha a little earlier. It gets them a nice, you know, gets them some MLB action. Maybe some folks who, you know, might have been on the fence coming from college to go see one of these college baseball games in Omaha. And now they'll say, you know what, at least I get to see an MLB game plus some up-and-coming players in college.
So Omaha was rewarded for hosting amateur baseball.
Yes.
Do you think that because Buffalo has hosted the Frozen Four and the IIHF tournament in recent years, the NHL will ever reward them by letting them host a real NHL team?
I'm waiting to see you go to one.
Is that possible?
It's you know, yeah.
Another baseball news, the Mets just traded for a guy named Brooks Pounders, which, great.
Brooks Pounders?
Pounders.
That's a great name.
The actual human being that exists and will now be frustrating me even further because he's a picture. So, great. So I got that going for me, too.
This reminds me of an old Bills Wire podcast I recorded with. Shout out Rob Quinn, old managing editor, but I was recording a podcast with him, and just minutes after we stopped recording, the Bills signed Cap Cappy. So we were quite mad about that we weren't able to get our reactions to Cap Cappy on audio, but we were able to get our reaction to Brooks Pounder?
Brooks Pounders.
Brooks Pounders, just plural, the plural of what I said.
Yeah. Pounders.
All right, I think that'll do it. That was episode 4 of the Kyle Selege Variety Hour. My name's Kyle Selege. You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Selege, the same way it's spelt in the podcast title. D'Lo, where can the people follow you?
They can find me at JDeLauro on the Twitter, and yeah, that'll be my exciting land.
Nick, how about you?
Nick _ Wotan, WOJTON, or as Kyle did, you guys can find me on LinkedIn as well.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I did? That nice. Was a while ago.
Yeah.
That was good. Oh, that was good. So make sure you read the Bills Wire articles. That's billswire.usatoday.com or billswire.com. I think it redirects. Bills Wire on Facebook and Twitter at the Bills Wire. Listen to the Bills Wire podcasts when Jeremy and Matt do them. They're good. And also listen to this podcast. You made it this far. You might as well keep listening. Am I right? So that'll do it. Thanks for listening. Bye.